Let us read from Acts 28. Acts 28 from verse 16. Acts 28, the 16th verse. And when we came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard, but Paul was suffered to dwell by himself with a soldier that kept him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, Paul called the chief of the Jews together. And when they were come together, he said unto them, Men and brethren, though I have committed nothing against the people or customs of our fathers, yet was I delivered prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans, who, when they had examined me, would have let me go, because there was no cause of death in me. But when the Jews spake against it, I was constrained to appeal unto Caesar, not that I had aught to accuse my nation of. For this cause therefore have I called for you, to see you, and to speak with you, because that for the hope of Israel I am bound with this chain. And they said unto him, We neither received letters out of Judea concerning thee, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee, but we desire to hear of thee what thou thinkest. For as concerning this sect, we know that everywhere it is spoken against. Here we have Paul's first ministry in Rome. More than 2 years ago, as recorded in chapter 23 and verse 11 of Acts, the Lord stood by Paul and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. And now the Lord is going to fulfill this promise. So Paul begins to speak for the Lord, to do the work that the Lord had called him to and preserved him for. And there is a sweet sense of being in the Lord's way in his heart, because he is where the Lord has said he is to be and is doing what the Lord wants him to do. There is nothing like being in the Lord's way, in the center of his will. Whatever else might be happening, if we are pleasing to God and have a good conscience, the Lord is with us. And then we read verse 17. It came to pass after 3 days Paul called the chief of the Jews together, and so on. For 3 days, presumably for rest and recovery, and no doubt prayerful preparation. He had been through all the rigors of the voyage and the shipwreck and the final journey to Rome. And there is nothing wrong with some relaxation to recover from an exhausting experience. It's not the same as laziness. It's to be refreshed in order to work better afterwards. Laziness is indolence and inactivity, which is a means, which is rather an end in itself, isn't it? And the tragic thing about laziness is it's unproductive and wasteful and sinful. But relaxation out of need to equip you to be better afterwards is a God-given gift. Like Elijah under the juniper tree, the Lord lets him sleep and gives him food and water. And as Paul begins to serve the Lord here, remember what the Lord said, as we quoted earlier, 23:11, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. Now, what would be this bearing witness for Christ? What had the Lord in mind for Paul? And did the apostle fulfill it? We believe he did, for two reasons. And these two reasons we're going to look at are the two great blessings of being in the Lord's way. There are many, many other blessings, but two of the blessings of being in the Lord's way are in these two things that happened concerning Paul. And the first is that the Lord graciously enabled him. And the Lord certainly did that. And the second is the Lord graciously honoured him. And we're going to see that the Lord did that. Two blessings from being in the Lord's way. First, the Lord graciously enabled him. From verse 17 and onwards, Paul called the chief of the Jews together, and so on. Who are the people that Paul first contacts? And the answer is, of course, the Jews, verse 17. You might have thought he would have wanted to make contact with the Gentiles, plenty of them in Rome. He might have had enough of the Jews. After all, they had caused him nothing but trouble and danger in Jerusalem. And it was because of them, humanly, that now he's here in Rome. But no. What a gracious concern that he should not give up on these constant enemies, but call for the chief leading Jews of the city to come to his lodgings that he might speak with them. That's a wonderfully gracious spirit. The Lord graciously enabled him. Maybe something that helped him was this, that he was once like these Jews, wasn't he, against the Christians. He had breathed out threatenings and slaughter. He was instrumental in putting a number of them to death. And when he thinks of what they tried to do to him, he is only to think, I was once the same, and I would have done similar. It's a good thing, dear friends, to keep us humble, isn't it? When we think of unbelievers and what they do to Christians, unbelievers and how they live, enemies who have it in for Christians, remember that we ourselves once were sinners, unsaved, and at enmity with God and his people. And it's a humbling thought that it's only by God's grace that we're made to differ. And we've got no cause to be proud and no cause to avoid such people. You know the phrase, there but for the grace of God go I. It apparently originated with John Bradford, the martyr, who was put to death in Mary Tudor's reign in 1555. He was passing a group of prisoners who were being led to the gallows to be hanged. And he pointed to them and he said, there, but for the grace of God, goes John Bradford. And so we feel the same. And so this gracious, Christ-like concern. And another thing he was enabled for was a scriptural order in the way he proceeded. You turn over the page into the Epistle to the Romans, chapter 1, verse 16, and he speaks about not being ashamed of the gospel of Christ, the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. There's a priority in God's economy here, and that Paul sought to follow, although he was the apostle to the Gentiles, but to the Jew first at Rome, because Christianity is the fulfillment and consummation of their religion. He speaks about verse 20, the hope of Israel. And the hope of Israel is the Messiah. It's where it all is fulfilled, isn't it? All the preparation of the 4,000 years of Old Testament history, the types, the shadows, the prophecies, the predictions, the promises, all fulfilled in Christ and the gospel. The Jewish religion, the root and the stem. Christianity, the blossom, the full flower of it. The tragedy is, of course, that the Jews are blind to it and don't know their own Messiah. And that's why they need to be reached. And Paul will reach them here with the hope of Israel. At Boreham Wood, last Lord's Day, where I was preaching, I happened to be in the vestry at the back, waiting for the elder to come and pray with me before the service. I saw on the shelves there rows and rows of TBS Bibles, and a number of them were Hebrew New Testaments. And I made the mistake of turning it so that you open the page, open the cover to the left and read like that, which of course you've got to do the other way round, because it's read from right to left, isn't it? But why were there so many Hebrew New Testaments? Well, because Boreham Wood has 1,200 Jewish families and is the fastest growing area in the UK for Jewish community. And there are there's a synagogue and all kinds of things. And the friends in this church, they visit these Jewish houses and offer them a Jewish or a Hebrew New Testament, I should say. And they seek to witness. And it's an excellent ministry, and quite right. Not something I think we could do here, but wherever they are, it's right to reach them and hear to the Jew first. Graciously enabled. And one further thing is this. He wants to clear himself in the eyes of these Jews. That's the point of what we read here, you see. He says to them, "Men and brethren, though I have committed nothing against the people or customs of our fathers, yet was I delivered prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans, who, when they had examined me, would have let me go because there was no cause of death in me. But when the Jews spake against it, I was constrained to appeal unto Caesar, not that I had ought to accuse my nation of. For this cause have I called for you, to see you and to speak with you, because for the hope of Israel I am bound with this chain." What it means is, if the Jews at Jerusalem had sent letters to these Jews at Rome about Paul and blackened his name, how could Paul then preach the gospel to them? If a delegation of them had come deliberately to inform their brethren in Rome about Paul and blackened his name, it would have prejudiced them against the apostle and against the gospel he sought to bring to them. So in case they have done this, for the gospel's sake, Paul seeks to explain matters. And he's very tactful. He protests his innocence. He says that the Romans have found him innocent. He's only appealing to Caesar now, because the Jews wouldn't accept the verdict in Jerusalem and Caesarea. But he doesn't blame them. And here now he's a prisoner because of his message. And there's the touching lifting up of his arm and the chain that attaches himself to a Roman soldier. And he's very wise, isn't he, in wanting to clear the ground and prevent any misunderstanding and prejudice against himself and the gospel. And so there is a combination of graciousness and wisdom in the apostle. Where does graciousness and wisdom come from? Well, neither is in our hearts by nature. Are we not so ungracious? Are we not so foolish by nature, left to ourselves? But here the Apostle Paul is exhibiting such graciousness, such wisdom, because the Lord is enabling him to be like this. The Lord sent him there, thou shalt bear testimony for me at Rome, and the Lord is with him, enabling him. And dear friends, if we are in the Lord's way, if we're walking in obedience to him over whatever matter, you can be sure that whatever you need, the Lord will give you. It's all part and parcel of the thing. Philippians 2 and verse 12 and 13. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God which worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. As you work out in faithfulness to the Lord, he works in, enabling you to do that. You need grace like Paul. I need grace like Paul. He will work it in us and enable us to exhibit it. We need wisdom like Paul. God will give us wisdom. He works it in us. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 24. Faithful is he which calleth you, who also will do it. He called Paul to Rome. The Lord does it in and through Paul. The grace and the wisdom. Only he can work these things into us. So pray for them. If you know you're in the Lord's way, if tomorrow, the next day, or whatever, you know that you face things, have to do things as a Christian, what's right and pleasing in his sight, he who has led you that way will equip you for everything that you need. Whatever it is, you can count on the Lord's faithfulness. Certainly, I will be with thee, he said to Moses as he sent him to Pharaoh. And certainly the Lord was. It is a standing principle in the kingdom of God that whatever the Lord calls us to, he equips us with. Whatever we might need in the way of obedience, the Lord will abundantly supply. We're only bereft, we're only left to ourselves, and then not wholly so, when we're in the way of disobedience and backsliding. We forfeit so much, although of course the Lord watches over us and restrains us even so to bring us back. But when we're in his way, we have his presence, his enabling to be gracious, to be wise. Well, the Lord graciously enabled Paul. How well he acquitted himself here thus far. And then the second thing is this. The Lord graciously honoured him. Now, this is a remarkable reply that he receives from these Jews. They said unto him, we neither received letters out of Judea concerning thee, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. Now, isn't that remarkable? Not a letter had come from the Jerusalem Jews to their brethren in Rome about Paul. You'd have thought that's what they would have been busy doing. But in their interest, send poison letters to Rome about Paul. So when he gets there to appeal to Caesar, all the Jews are informed about the worst concerning him, and they'll turn against him as well. And what the Jerusalem Jews couldn't do, the Roman Jews might do. But not a single missive or epistle had come in the post. And not only that, verse 21, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. Some had come from Jerusalem. But not one word was breathed about Paul. Isn't that extraordinary? They maybe came to visit relatives, they may have come for trade or whatever. There was a coming and going between Rome and Jerusalem on the part of the Jews. It would have been most natural for them to have been busy blackening Paul's character, dragging his reputation in the mud before he got to Rome, so that the worst could be thought of him, perhaps done to him. But not one of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. It wasn't even that none bothered to show up. It was that some did come for other reasons, but they didn't say anything about him. It just doesn't make sense, does it? It was not what was expected. When you think of how relentlessly the Jews hounded Paul, they tried to lynch him, they accused him before the governors, two attempts to assassinate him. And we know that they were very, very zealous in pursuing a thing to the end. In chapter 17 and verse 13, when Paul had lately left Thessalonica, where the Jews had caused a storm of trouble and persecution, he went down to Berea by night for his own safety. And we read in Acts 17, verse 13, but when the Jews of Thessalonica had knowledge that the word of God was preached of Paul at Berea, they came thither also and stirred up the people. And Paul had been sent away again for his own safety. They'll go from place to place to place, hounding a servant of Christ in order to silence his ministry, because they can't bear to hear Christ and the resurrection preached, the very hope of Israel. And yet, nothing. We neither received letters out of Judea concerning thee, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. Silence. How do you account for that? Well, the Lord has honoured Paul, hasn't he? This is clearly of God, isn't it? It's almost miraculous. How did the Lord work to bring it about? See how the Lord can do it. Well, he maybe made them give up, having failed in Jerusalem and Caesarea. Maybe they were going to try at Rome as well, but, well, Proverbs 19, verse 21. There are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. And you see, what man plans and what God counsels are two different things. And the Lord caused these Jews to give up. Hitherto shalt thou come, and no further, he says. Psalm 76, verse 10, surely the wrath of men shall praise thee, and the remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain. And there's a restraining there. Made them give up. See how God has the hearts of all men in his hands. Enemies can plot and plan and determine, and God can stop them and make them give up their attempt, if it's his will. And he honoured Paul. He saved him from further accusations and attacks from the Jews. And there is another element to this in his providential working. I wonder if the Jews remembered something, because you see, 5 years before this, as recorded in chapter 18 and verse 2, when Claudius was the emperor, Acts 18 verse 2, Paul finds in Corinth a Jewish couple, husband and wife, Aquila and his wife Priscilla, and they have emigrated to Corinth because Claudius had commanded all Jews to depart from Rome. There was an ethnic cleansing in the city. For some reason or other, the emperor had expelled all Jews from the city. That was 5 years ago. The Jews had been very unpopular at Rome for some reason, and Claudius dealt with it. And then, in AD 54, Claudius gets assassinated, and Nero comes to the throne in AD 54, 5 years before this. And he has a concubine named Poppaea, who favours the Jews. And so Nero relaxes the edict of Claudius, and the Jews come streaming back. But they've got to be careful. They were expelled at one time. They must behave themselves now. And maybe it is that these Jews from Jerusalem and Caesarea, knowing all about Paul, having been personally involved with him, arrive in the empire, the hub of the empire, Rome, and think to themselves, we better not stir up trouble against this man and add our accusations before the emperor, because the previous emperor got rid of us all and we don't want to provoke the ire of Nero. And it may well cause them to keep mum and keep quiet. And what a providence this is, isn't it? You see how God works for Paul, goes before him, orders things in the city of Rome, and the edict of Claudius, the presence of Poppaea and her favouring the Jews and the effect upon Nero, all these things God uses to protect and honour Paul. And we're not talking here about a little local constituency MP or some councillor. We're talking about the most mighty ruler in the world of that time, Claudius Nero. Utter despots, total authority, doing as they please. But God moves them. And God uses the one and the other to make these Jews careful. Careful what you say, careful what you do about my servant Paul. You see how God thinks more of one Christian than he does of the whole Roman Empire and all the race of the Jews at that time. And he comes in for Paul. And we know that the eye of God is upon his people more than upon the great ones of the earth, and more upon all the masses that seem to matter far more. And the Lord sees you as a little sparkling diamond amongst all the rest, which are of far lesser value, and he will care for you and for his own. And so the Lord graciously honours Paul. Isn't it a wonderful thing to think, I am so favoured by heaven, I'm so looked after and watched over and cared for, and the Lord is coming in for me. And then this thing was of the Lord in another way, because surely wasn't this in kindness to Paul? If these Jews had sent letters, if they'd come as a delegation, and if they'd made known the whole thing here at Rome as well, it surely would have compounded Paul's ordeal and his sufferings. It would have been as if Jerusalem had come to Rome, and it was all happening again, this chorus of accusations from these bitter enemies calling for his being put to death. Well, the Lord is not going to allow that. And you know, he does spare us. He knows that there is only so much we can take. And Paul was conscious of that in another place in Philippians 2 and verse 27, where he writes that the Lord, in sparing mercy, didn't allow a certain dear friend of his to die of his sickness. So he was, that's Epaphroditus in chapter 2, verse 25 of Philippians. And he says, he was sick unto death, but God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. And you see, he's keenly aware that if he'd have lost Epaphroditus by death, it would have been an additional blow compounding his sorrow. And there is a sense, dear friends, in which God is sparing, and it's not usual there is sorrow upon sorrow, a double blow. Or if there is, then certainly he'll give double help and grace for it. But the Lord is a sparing God, and he moderates our afflictions, and we can appeal to him for this. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. He won't allow us to suffer temptation, trial above that which we are able, but will with the temptation make a way to escape, and so on. So in kindness to Paul, he kept these Jews from doing their work in Rome against him. And then a further thing. Don't you think this is a wonderful token? In verse 21, we neither received letters, nor any of the brethren came and spake harm of thee. Well, that means then, if these Jews have got nothing against Paul, because they don't know about what happened, his innocence is established in the eyes of the Jewish community at Rome. And if his innocence is established in the eyes of the Jews at Rome, and he's got the acquittal among them, it's a good token, isn't it, for when he stands before Nero, and for Nero to hear his case, because there won't be a horde of Jews calling upon the emperor to condemn him. If there's no evidence at Rome against him, well, then it's likely that Nero will acquit him. And we believe he did, and that Paul had some years of ministry left to him before his second and final imprisonment, which ended in execution and martyrdom some years afterwards. So what a wonderful token. We neither received letters out of Judea concerning thee, neither any of the brethren that came showed or spake any harm of thee. That's a wonderful thing. He can now go to his hearing 2 years later and be pretty sure that all will be well. See how the Lord has honoured him. He can take up our cause, and he can plead for us. And then one further thing. The way is now open for the preaching of the gospel. Verse 22. But we desire to hear of thee what thou thinkest. For as concerning this sect, we know that everywhere it is spoken against. We're not used to hearing the Christian church spoken of as a sect, are we? Well, perhaps we are getting a little more used to it these days, sadly. But that's how it was regarded in the first century. And the Jews are willing to hear the apostle as he now preaches the gospel. And so the Lord has gone before. Thou shalt bear witness for me at Rome. And here in his rented apartment, he can have freedom to speak to the Jews first. And so how the Lord has wonderfully gone before and honoured the apostle in these things. And again, dear friends, if we are in the way of duty, the Lord will be with us in the way of help. Duty is ours, events are God's. As we sang earlier, Psalm 37, verse 34, wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt thee to inherit the land, which is a way of saying he'll lift you up and put you in possession of blessing. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. All Paul had to do is to keep the Lord's way. And all that the Lord did was to enable him and honour him. And so we shall find the same. May it be so, for the glory of his great name. Amen. Let us sing together hymn 697.